Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here with Jessica Meterson. How you doing, Jess?
I am great, Josh. I am pumped. We are here to discuss comic books and hopefully especially mainly girl power comic books if I have my way. Maybe even a little Betty and Veronica if my daughter has her way. Or some Simpsons if my son has his way.
It's all good. It's all good. So, Jess, I couldn't
We
help
could
but
do like a
not.
junior Leo Geek thing. Isaac could totally talk forever and he would love it. We could have Isaac and Carrie discussing kids' comic books. It's a whole new thing. Maybe Disney will latch onto it. Josh, I just came up with a new $1 million idea.
Yes, that we went public with. So, good call there.
Fudge.
Jessica, I couldn't help but notice your comics did not have bags and boards. Why?
These things, Josh.
Why are you bending them? Stop it! That's
All right.
wrong!
It is
Why?
funny, and you can't talk to my son because he does want me to save all these so that he can sell them and be a millionaire when he's older. First of all, he's going to have to work for his own money, just like his mommy did. Second of all, my thought is at this point, the whole let's collect stuff, everybody's collecting it now. So, like, it's not like this is ever going to be the only episode of this one, even though this is an awesome one and it should be a collector's item someday. But there's got to be like thousands of copies out there or millions. I don't even know how many of these they print.
Oh God, that really hurt me in a way I can't even.
Oh, look at
Get the bags and boards. I mean,
I get them. I throw them away. I'm like, why did they give me
Oh God,
these
Jesus.
things?
Oh, that's horrible. Why do you say those things?
But I never break the binder on a paperback or a hard copy book. I am very careful with books, but they're comic books. They're meant to be read and loved.
Yeah, and you love them by taking care of them. It's like. You clothe your children. I mean, you're not gonna. You live in the frozen tundra of Wisconsin. You know, you don't send your kids outside without a jacket, thinking like, "Well, they're children. They'll bounce back."
They'll be fine. You know, I'm gonna have to dig out one of these days. My dad gave me a bunch of his old comics, and there are probably some in there that are pretty rare, but they are all in horrendous shape. So I'm gonna have to bring those out one of these times just to show Josh, maybe like a shock therapy kind of thing.
That's so horribly wrong. It's
I'm
not
gonna have to go
funny.
look at them. I wonder if any of them are worth anything, though.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as you're not abusing them, as long as I don't have to call Comic Book Protective Services,
BPS.
take away your geek card. How dare you?
Oh, I'm just not a greedy geek. I love them and I plan to keep them forever. These are my Princess Diana magazines from the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I take care of what I love, but maybe I'm old-fashioned that way.
In different ways.
I don't neglect what I love.
Anyway, I'm sure everyone is fascinated by this, but so we are here to talk, especially She-Hulk, given that she is a lawyer, and Josh, you and I are lawyers. We're not green, and we don't get all weird, kind of muscly sometimes. But other than that, we have a lot in common with her. So
That and the author is a lawyer as well, an
that's right.
immigration attorney in New York, who also writes Letter 44, Red Lantern, and I think Inhumans, and a couple other titles. And he's nice. I actually exchanged some tweets with him last week, and he was very pleasant.
Aw, well, we lawyers are a nice crowd.
We are. We can hang out together. He was nice. I would like to have coffee with him and talk comics sometime. He's a nice man.
Well, geeky lawyers are like the most socially skilled of all the lawyers and all the geeks.
Yes, we are. So we went to finishing school in addition to everything else. We clean up well. Well,
That's right.
let's talk She-Hulk. I've done a couple blog posts about it. You've done a blog post about it. And so being Lady lawyer and being able to identify with She-Hulk in a way that I cannot because I'm a dude. What'd you think of the Captain America, Fogler v. Rogers courtroom drama?
The part I appreciated the most, well, first of all, I gotta say, I could never wear this to court. I don't think that would work in a couple ways. But aside from that, I do like the hair, though. The thing that I did think was the funniest, actually, and the part that I could relate to the most, was that, you know, she never quite knew what her client was up to, what the client's true story was, what the client was going to say on the witness stand. And I think that's an experience that all lawyers have, you know, had, where you're never quite sure what words are going to come out of your client's mouth, or they don't want to quite tell you the whole story, even though there's this wonderful thing called the attorney-client privilege, plus there's attorney work product protections and all that. So I thought that was a part, you know, where, and you also, you know, you're like, I have a game plan for this litigation, but the client doesn't want to go along with that, and that struggle too. And, you know, there are actually ethical rules on what parts of litigation the attorney basically gets to have control over and what parts the client has. Obviously with Captain America, I think the rules are probably a little bit different, but so I thought I could really relate to that part about just having a little bit of an uncooperative client at times. Not that I ever have any clients like that. My clients are all a delight.
Yeah, there's always the client surprise. And in this one, I mean, I really liked it because you do not frequently see courtroom dramas in comic books. And so it normally escalates to Hulk smash, the shield getting thrown, and you don't have, you know, the issues being resolved in court. So on that level, having a three-part series was pretty cool.
Yeah.
In the tweets that I had with the author, a lot got cut out because they can't tell the entire procedural story at once. So in issue nine, it looks like we go from Daredevil's opening statement to witness testimony coming in during the opening, back to the opening statement. And in his tweets, he said, well, that wasn't the case. That went from opening statement to his first witness. And it's like, it didn't look that way. A little box saying, meanwhile, or
afterwards.
Because I read that and went, you can't call a witness during opening. That's so editorially, there are things you just can't do in a comic that you would have in real life. You can't take every step because, one, it would probably bore the reader to death if they did that.
Yes.
And that's a risk. Total risk, but the amount that they did get in was pretty substantial. Now, being the evidence geek, I had tons of fun with it, both in issues 9 and issue 10.
Okay, like give me a few examples.
So the premise of the lawsuit is because Harold Fogler, on his deathbed in the hospital, made all these accusations against Captain America causing the death of his brother Sam Fogler in 1940. Problem with that, it's not a dying declaration.
Right.
Dying declarations have to relate to why the declarant is dying, not why somebody else died in 1940.
Right.
So you have that it's just the misapplication of the dying declaration. Now, the author, to his credit, responded to me in a tweet and said, well, in the Marvel Universe, the dying declaration's different. It's like, okay, fine. Riddle me this. So
that was the hardest part I had to think, because he even tries to explain it. I mean, he at least acknowledges that normally it's hearsay, but this whole idea that, you know, on your deathbed, you're not going to be, you know, a liar. And I'm like, lots of people lie on their deathbed. So I appreciated the effort to kind of try and justify, but I'm like, that was actually the thing that bothered me the most, probably out of the whole thing. You'll just get to accuse somebody. Otherwise, there are a couple people I'm going to accuse on my deathbed. By the way, that person's a bastard too.
So there was that. The statute of limitations really raised my blood pressure because there's no way around it.
Couldn't you argue that the discovery rule, if in theory somehow that evidence was new to the victim's family, you might be able to argue discovery rule?
I would not, because the facts were known in 1940. There were police reports filed in 1940, which was part of the plaintiff's case in the story, and bringing in...
Well, but not the part about Steve Rogers and what he said. I mean, in theory, I'm not saying this works, but in theory, I could see... But since the dying guy, Harold, since Harold was also a member of the family, I think it's too late to argue discovery rule. But like if some stranger had come up, because the police reports, I don't think detailed everything, they might have some argument that there'd be a discovery rule exception. I'm a big fan of the discovery rule, so I don't like to see it given a short shrift.
Yeah, but it's 1940, so there was nothing between 1940 to 1942 that would have stopped it, unless you wanted, because if he had already been, if Rogers had already become Captain America, say by 41, 42, that would have been an awesome time to have sued or threatened a lawsuit, because the U.S. government then would have just paid money to have made him go away. So there were issues with tolling statutes of limitations against servicemen who were deployed. So, but even if you did that and said Rogers presumed dead in 1945, still could have gone after his estate. So when I look at the statute of limitations issue, I think 70 years is too much. And even if they were able to get around that, when Rogers was found in the ice and brought back later, okay, now he's back. And so even if you told it from World War II and included the missing in action period, you would still have that two-year window to file a lawsuit after he returned in the 21st century. So,
well, see, my bigger problem with that one was just who could bring the suit, right? His parents would have to be dead by now, and Sam was a kid. So unless he'd had some kid with some other teenager that nobody knew about, I'm like, who's bringing this suit? I mean, I don't know in the different states, but normally it has to be, you know, immediate kin. So that was the one thing that I actually thought was very confusing. We're like, because they even say, I think at some point in there, his descendants or something. Yeah. That makes it seem like Sam had kids. And I'm like, no, he was a kid himself. Pretty sure he didn't have any.
It would be the brother's descendants.
And yeah, see, and I don't think they get to bring a wrongful death claim for their uncle.
That died 70 years earlier.
Yeah.
And so we're talking.
That was the part I had a harder time with.
And so, which is why I thought, okay, maybe it's the Harold's estate bringing the lawsuit, because mm-hmm. there's at least privity that way. But that sort of thing doesn't happen either. I mean, at least yeah. I haven't seen a case of there's a wrongful death in a family, and the, say, a husband's killed, and then the wife wants to sue because of her husband's death, and she dies for whatever reason, and then, say, her sister, the sister-in-law, is bringing a wrongful death lawsuit on the wife's behalf as the executor to her estate, suing whoever wrongfully offed the brother-in-law, which again would be weird. I mean, which would be so procedurally there's some hoops that you have to jump through.
Yeah, and again, for storyline, I'm like, this is why they hate regular lawyers, because we're no fun. So for plot purposes, all right, we'll move on. So what else?
So when you get to issue 10, there are some issues with trial procedure that one of the things was right. And so it appears during the plaintiff's case in chief, they call Steve Rogers to testify. So they're calling the defendant to testify during the plaintiff's case in chief. Okay, normally you wouldn't do that because the witnesses are disclosed, and you would save it to cross-examine the defendant, so that way they're not up twice, and you disclose the witnesses, and you have an agreement of, we'll have our guy come up, you know, at this time, and that's when you get to question him. And California Evidence Code actually allows you to call an adverse party and mm-hmm. question them, effectively giving a cross-examination.
In your case in chief?
In your case in chief. Ah. Which... So it's procedurally right, but if She-Hulk had agreed to make Rogers available as her own witness during the defense's case, that's when Murdoch could have cross-examined Rogers. So I don't know if they were purposely trying to set that up or if it was just for dramatic storytelling, but they did, and that was right. The other thing that would be extremely difficult to pull off would be proving damages. And so I pulled the California jury instructions on damages in a wrongful death case of an Ooh. Adult. And that gets wickedly complicated in trying to figure out somebody who died before World War II that was of draft age.
Yeah.
Who aspired to be a doctor, but was not yet a doctor. And so you would have to determine, could he have survived World War II?
right?
Would he have become a doctor? So there's, you know, and it can't be speculation. So if, at that point, you could be looking at grades to go, was this guy on track to actually do this? You would then also look at mortality rates and actually have data that way to go like, okay, everyone drafted from this state, you know, had this percentage. So would he have survived or not? And so
wow.
When you look at that, it's like, oh God, that would be complicated to really determine how long would he have lived. Just because
right.
the brother lived until 90 something doesn't mean Sam Folkler would have lived into his 90s. So so it gets very complicated just on the damages side. The other theory I had would be do a FOIA request for the conviction and the other information about the fifth columnists and the Nazis operating on U.S. soil, because Cap said basically everything on the stand and then declined to answer further on why there wasn't a record of it because it was classified.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not helpful. But what happened in 1940, you really can't claim that it would still be a national security reason to keep it from being going public. Plus,
unless Hydra is still at play.
Possibly. But in 1945, we were trying German citizens in the United States in treason trials because Nazis came ashore from U-boats to cause sabotage. We knew this in 45.
Yeah.
So the national security reasons to keep it still confidential would be very, very problematic. Moreover, Cap could call the president and say, remember the time I saved the world? No, not that time I saved the world. The other time. No, not that time I saved the world. The other time.
Cap didn't want to do that.
He has Roosevelt's phone number that the current president still has in the Marvel Universe. So call him, dude, and say like, hey, I got this wacky civil lawsuit. There was this American collaborator with Nazis, and I kind of need that information to rebut this civil lawsuit. And what's the president going to do? Send the attorney general with a thank you note and a copy. So
those here you go.
Well, that and in California, unlike the federal rules of evidence, any felony conviction can come in to discredit a witness. Mm-hmm. And so when you throw in the improperly admitted dying declaration, you could then impeach that dying declaration with that arrest that would most likely have been for treason.
Yes, I'd say certainly a Nazi sympathizer supporter for sure against Captain America. Yeah, that's a very good way.
Yeah, it's and then it's over. So,
yeah. But see, he didn't have to do that because he just had to hire She-Hulk. And then he knew that if he hired She-Hulk, oh, wait, that's the wrong one. That's a page before. That's Dr. Faustus. The part, yeah, about he hired She-Hulk because he knew with She-Hulk, he would win. That was pretty awesome.
This is true. And, you know, and Daredevil does get a good consolation prize of let's go beat up Nazis together. I mean, really. How do you say thank you?
All right. So I thought they set that up interestingly. I like the fact that they're back to that blue file because I haven't wanted to know what's going on with the blue file. So I say She-Hulk, I'm not crazy about how She-Hulk is drawn. And so that kind of gets on my nerves. So I go in and out of it. But otherwise, it is good. It is nice. And so, yes, thank you, Marvel. And thank you. What's
Sula,
the author's name again?
Sula, S-O-U-L-E. I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not 100% on how it's pronounced because there are a lot of vowels right there. So,
yes, but thank you for making a book about a lawyer and like real lawyer stuff. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's when they had the immigration one, they had the right form cited.
Yeah.
So I like what he's doing.
Very cool.
So let's talk about Thor.
Oh, that's right. I don't have my Thor comic books, although I do have the two of them. I forgot. I think those are somewhere else. That I am very excited for. I need that. I have to say, like, I love the art. I love how Wonder Woman's drawn and these Wonder Woman's, and I love how they're doing the Goddess of Thunder. And I am very intrigued by what's going on there. So, and my daughter knows she saw Chris Hemsworth on the cover of People magazine when we were in the grocery store line today. She's like, that's Thor. And I'm like, wow, that's kind of scary that you can pick him out so easily.
I would like a poster, please, on my wall, Mom. Yes.
You are way too young for that. But so he is a great Thor, but I am very excited about the Goddess of Thunder.
Well, I won't lie. When they announced it, I thought, like, okay, this could be a cheap gimmick or really cool. And it's fallen on the really cool side of things.
Well, just because we're going to learn so much about the hammer, even. I can't remember to say the name.
Mjolnir. Yeah. Mjolnir.
Oh, okay. But that we're kind of getting so much more of a sense of, like, how it operates and what it can do. I think that's really cool.
That and Thor Odinson's still running around. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what Nick Fury said to him at the end of Original Sin that made he and Odin unworthy to lift the hammer.
Yeah.
So that's, it's like, what the heck happened there? And Thor Odinson's still running around with the axe. I look forward to seeing his, because they'll bring him back. You know, they'll restore it. But initially, after the first issue, I thought it was his mom who...
I heard that from somebody. Yes, that was a spoiler going around.
Yeah. After reading issue two, I now believe it's a human.
Ooh.
Because her thoughts sound human. And so
that's true. She doesn't speak like the Asgardians, does she?
In her thought bubbles, she does not. She speaks like a human.
Right?
When she talks, she has the Norse language... the way she communicates, which is Thor.
Yeah.
But so it's like, okay, this is actually kind of fascinating. And it wasn't the way I think. So again, I really don't want this to come out wrong. There was the danger of alienating guys if it came across as too, I am woman, hear me roar. She never did that. And then when the Frost Giants start making girl comments about her, you go like, okay, kick their ass. And so they did it in a very brilliant way that men and women will enjoy the storyline. And I thought, like, okay, that's cool. I like the way that they did that because I was concerned. It's like, okay, how are they going to do this? How are they going to keep everybody happy? And I think they're pulling it off.
I think they are too. I think it's off to a very good start. So I say that's certainly the comic book that I'm most intrigued by and actually like, okay, when is the next one coming out?
Uh-huh.
You know, make sure it's reserved at the comic book store. That's a whole new level of geekdom for me. So the kids love it too, because now they get to go with me all the time.
That's fantastic. And like, that was the point, because Marvel realized to their credit, wow, women like comics too, because women go to the comic book store. Not all comic book stores, but this happens. And they'll, you know, the guy behind the counter will say, like, oh, you're here for your boyfriend? And so they will assume that the woman is not a patron.
Yeah.
And Marvel had the realization that, like, oh, women will read these too, because they like them. And
they're making some strong, interesting women. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of fun. I mean, and again, yes, I tend to be more biased towards the Marvel Universe in large part because of what they've done just, you know, with TV and movies and everything. But Wonder Woman is still fantastic. And I'd say there was an older Wonder Woman series that they did for a while. And then this one too, where I think, I mean, it gets into really deep, impressive stuff that I find it's not just the action, but, you know, it's great. I mean, it's a real, you know, it's a gripping novel just told in very small chunks that you have to wait in between for, which is a little bit frustrating, but with great pictures.
I have fond memories of Linda Carter doing the spin as a child.
Oh my God, me too.
I don't read the current Wonder Woman comic. And so what's happening there and why do you like it?
Well, see, and I guess I actually saw the reason I went for this one is they actually had like an ad in my Westfield Comics in the window about this new one coming out. And I was intrigued. I mean, I have to say good illustrations do intrigue me, right? If the cover art is good, I'm intrigued. I always love Wonder Woman. So there was one, I've got to go back and find it. There was one storyline that was actually written by a famous author and she did this fantastic, she kind of revised a whole origin story. And I always love work on the origin story. But in this one, so this is actually episode 36. So I'm clearly way behind and I need to go back. But she's actually now the god of war, which is awesome. And apparently the Amazons have of their men of Amazonian blood now, their brothers that they were working with, but there's a split over whether they should continue to work with them. And then the queen was turned to clay, and at the, well, I don't want to ruin this for anyone, so I won't say what happens at the end, but so she's basically Wonder Woman, and I kind of can relate to, because right now I'm feeling a little bit overloaded and stressed out. And there's a whole section in here about Wonder Woman too, being overloaded, being like queen of the Amazons, trying to take care of them, being the god of war and having to deal with the gods. And as we all know, the gods can be a handful, you know, trying to take care of all these different groups that she has to take care of and not doing a great job with any of them, which is very much, right, what women struggle with. I mean, I guess I'd be curious, has any man ever said, I've got too many people I need to take care of and I'm worried I'm not doing it well enough? Even when they're mucking up completely, they're sure they're doing a great job. So I'm like, is it only women and female superheroes that are too hard on themselves, or at least express it in the comic books? So maybe guys see that and see that as whining, but I'm like, wow, one woman is feeling, you know, stretched out like I am.
I think it's different for men, the guilt that they have.
Yeah.
And so, because we're not relied on for nurturing, that we're supposed to be the ones employed and take care of things. And the counter to that is, well, I'm missing my kids growing up. I'm not going to be able to go outside and play catch with them. I'm not able to do those things that a dad should be doing, which is why a lot of dads who feel that they totally screwed up being a dad are good grandfathers later.
Yeah,
because
they're making up
because they feel horrible. And so I think there's no shortage of guilt. I think it's different in how it manifests between men and women. And so I don't, but I think it's different. And I think the way people suffer and feel bad is different between the two. And yeah. I don't think one is suffering more than the other. I think both suffer from it.
I do too. I guess the question is whether men, and whether in comic books, male superheroes verbalize it, right? I mean, vocalize it, whatever, you know. I think women, and that is often a thing, and yes, you know, men may struggle from some of these same things. It's just not acceptable to talk about it as much as it is for women. Or on the other hand, do they see it as whining? I'm one of those people who tends to put all my dirty laundry out there. I'm more on the whole, you know, I am not perfect at all kind of thing. And some people, men and women, don't ever like to admit to anyone that they're not perfect. But to me, that seems way harder. But anyway, so I'd just be curious if there's ever a male superhero who's like, I'm not sure, you know, I'm just not doing everything for everyone that I should be, for my people, for the gods, for, you know, whatever.
It'd be an interesting case study to look at the superheroes who are fathers who feel that way. And yeah, maybe looking at the last couple years of Batman, because Batman's son, Damian, was Robin. And the impact of that. And I haven't read all of them. And so I slowed down when they got to turning Batman into a franchise after Bruce Wayne came back after Final Crisis. That's when I lost interest. But there's supposed to be a lot of good stuff with the New 52 that I haven't read. So, but that might be one to examine. There also could be some with Green Arrow, because after Cry for Justice, you end up with his granddaughter getting killed. And there was a period when I stopped reading, you know, a bunch of titles just because I couldn't just have, you know, spend $50 a week with a comic book. It's like, hey, I'm going to have to cut back. So,
yes.
But that would be interesting to do the analysis on. You pick a couple characters who are dads or grandfathers and
yeah, see
if they suffer that way. And if they don't, this is an area for comic book authors.
That's right.
To explore.
Anyway, so that's it on comic books. I know before we ended this, you had a new theory you wanted to share on something related to the Marvel Universe, and certainly also in comic book form, but a TV show that we both love.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I love what they're doing season two.
Yes.
Brett Dalton is an awesome bad guy from going chisel-jawed hero that everyone thought was one-dimensional and boring to realizing he can play super creepy evil dude.
Yes.
That's like, wow, you go, boy.
Yes.
So they are obviously setting up for the Inhumans. The Inhumans movie doesn't come out till November 2018.
Whoa.
The Captain Marvel movie, which focuses on Carol, doesn't come out until July 2018. So setting stuff up in 2014, that's a lot of lead time. And I started thinking, what could they do with this in a way that could maximize the time? And so here's my theory. When the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. find the Inhuman city, whichever one that they find, and they put the diviner in and they open it up and they get in, that triggers an alarm that alerts the Kree. And by alerting, because if the Kree are going to build a super secret advanced city on Earth, you would put an alarm system in it. It'd be stupid to invest the time, energy, experiment on human beings to speed up their evolution, to see what happens and do this, say, 5,000 years ago. That'd be crazy talk not to put an alarm in there.
Yes.
By triggering the alarm, that opens the door for the Kree Captain Mar-Vell to go to Earth. In the late 60s, early 70s, when the original Marvel Captain Mar-Vell came to Earth, it was to spy on humanity for the Kree Empire to see if they were a threat. They could do that on S.H.I.E.L.D. and have interplanetary espionage and have the Kree Captain Marvel run around for a season or two trying to figure out if humanity is a threat or not. Do the arc with the time that he's here, he turns into a hero, and then bump him off. Either have him die saving humanity in some way, or end up dying from cancer after he saves the Earth in some way. And by doing that on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they take care of a complex backstory. So by November 2018, when we have the Captain Marvel movie, the female-led superhero movie for Marvel is in no way diminished by saying she took the name of a male superhero or having to acknowledge that or spend any time with it. Now, they could completely ignore it altogether, which I think is a disservice to the original Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
So that would bother me if they completely ignore it whatsoever.
Just write him off. He didn't exist.
Yeah, because I really liked that character.
Yeah.
And so this is a total fanboy theory, but that would give Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a plot line that they could work with.
Yeah.
And that's relevant to building up the rest of the universe.
Oh.
And they take care of a backstory so that way it doesn't even need to be addressed.
Right.
By the time you have a Captain Marvel movie.
So, Marvel, Joss Whedon, are you listening? Hopefully this is their plan because that sounds brilliant to me. I know very little about this entire part of the universe, but it sounds brilliant. So if they're not following you, Josh, they should.
Thank you. That makes me feel good. But I'm just a lawyer. What do I know about plots? Having to convey things to a jury to convince them of something.
Okay. Don't sound bitter.
Crazy talk.
But I think it's a good idea, and that is cool. It does make me – I am certainly intrigued to see what they're doing with all of that this year. So.
Well, that, and by bringing in the Kree and having the Kree launch an interplanetary expedition to Earth to see what's going on, that's how you get the Chris Pratt cameo in.
Ooh, I want a Chris Pratt cameo. Chris, I want an Andy cameo. I love Andy. I'm like, I want, you know, can we work in a something?
They could have Chris Pratt see a transmission of that. So, I mean,
my earthly doppelganger.
You know, and make a comment, oh, dude looks like me. I mean, like, they could go there, but
hey, they did it on Friends. Remember they crossed over Phoebe with Ursula from Mad About You, and they actually worked that one out brilliantly, and they did a fantastic job with that. And I know I'm totally dating myself now because we were like, Mad About You, huh? Friends, what? But still, the Phoebe Ursula crossovers were freaking awesome.
They could do it. And so there are ways that they could do this, but they could do either a Star-Lord or a full-blown Guardians of the Galaxy cameo on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
by
Oh.
having the Kree go to Earth. So I don't know if that's their game plan, but that's
Oh, but it's
something.
fun. I'm going to kind of look for that, see if there are hints of that.
But it solves so many problems.
Yeah.
And it also solves the time issue of, dude, it's 2014. What are you going to
He's
do in,
got a while.
what are you going to do for the rest of 15 and then the fall of 15 and then 16 and then 17 and then
Oh.
18? I'm like, that's a lot of time, provided the series lasts that long. But that could at least, and I hope they do, but that could at least be a coherent game plan for them.
All right. Well, cool. Well, I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great note to end on. I have to say, it was fun talking comic books. Let's talk more next time. We can talk about, I'm sure Archie and Betty and Veronica have some interesting legal issues in them. So I'll talk to my daughter about those and see if we can work on a post together.
That would be fantastic. And for Christmas, I'm sending you bags and boards. That's just, oh God, I'm gonna have nightmares. I don't, oh, yes. Why? Why?
Just to give you a hard time. It's what I do.
Do you like wake up inspired to do that? I mean, that's horrible. Oh,
I'll
anyway.
stop throwing them away when they give them to me from now on.
No. God.
Right, we better go before Josh has a complete heart attack right here on camera.
Stay geeky, America, and put your comics in bags and boards, for the love of God. Take care.